you'll see there'll be a very powerful energy. It's not just the energy of the ability of being honest. That's part of it. It's the energy of two divine souls fused together. So your healing process is accelerated so much more, infinitely greater. Versus if you're a self-contained person, there is still two souls, but it doesn't have the power of the other soul. What about a person who actually lives a life of selflessness in order to enhance his ego? So the selflessness is really a veil, and the motivation, the soul behind the selflessness is self. So he's saying, in Tanya he discusses mainly how you express your egotistical soul through averus. But he's saying, what if you express it through mitzvahs? Through doing good. But basically at the root of the doing good is just I. People should honor me, I should gain power, I should gain success, I should gain honor, and so forth. Of course. Of course, that's a very common phenomenon. The whole idea, you see, this is where the whole point comes in. This is the whole idea comes in. Theoretically speaking, a Jew can be, let's put it bluntly, very, very frum. Okay, very frum. For 70 years. At least theoretically. And never be in touch once with his divine soul. Didn't transcend one's ego. The sense of self, of selfishness, of egocentrism, such a word, whatever, but you understand what I'm saying, is inculcated and infuses every religious act of this human being. As you mentioned, the Alter Rebbe discusses this phenomenon in chapter 1, Chesed Lomim Chatas, where a person can actually engage in a good act, in a charitable act, but the motivation behind it is totally selfish. Ligarmei. Totally selfish, whether it's for self-aggrandizement, whether it's for self-satisfaction, whether it's just I feel good about it, I cannot stand seeing the bad fate of the other person, I imagine myself being in that state. But it ultimately doesn't come from experiencing the other person. In fact, according to the Tanya, the experience of Jewishness begins with getting in touch with the divine soul. On the other hand, it should be emphasized that doing good with an ego is better than doing bad with an ego.
The act is done.
Of course, the act is different. It affects the act. As we put it, an act which has ego, it holds down the act, you know, it doesn't allow the act to rise, to soar. It ties it down to the egotistical reality. Right? I told you this story, the Baal Shem Tov came to a shul in a specific city that was characterized by a certain lifestyle. So they asked him to come into the shul. He says, no, the shul is full. I can't step in. The shul was empty. There was not one person there. It was full. I can't walk in. He says, well, what's the problem? The Zohar says, Torah and mitzvahs and prayer that lack awe, love, that lack divinity, don't soar upwards. He says, all the prayers in this shul stay down here in the territory. I pusha can't walk in. On the other hand, a chassid once came to the Alter Rebbe, lamenting about the fact that the charity that he gives is totally as a consequence of egotistical reasons. He said, I really don't care for the other person. There's no truth involved in my activities. He says, I give money to the needy, I distribute funds to poor Jews, but there's no emes in this act. It's totally false on my part. I don't care for them. So that Alter Rebbe meditated for a while, and Alter Rebbe would communicate through a melody. And he responded in Yiddish, he says, the poor person is living as a result of this money with emes. With this money he can actually buy food by emes, and buy milk by emes, buy bread by emes, and feed his children by emes. So that is emes. How do you know if what you're doing is actually motivated by the divine soul or by the animal soul? It's a good question. Perhaps someone would like to offer an answer. I'll just tell you one rule where you know that if this happens, it's for sure from the animal soul. And that is, if the actual conclusion of the calculation you're making in your mind is not to do the proper thing. If the actual activity is not going to be done, you know it's coming from the animal soul. It just might be an animal soul cloaked in beautiful ideological reasons, in religious reasons, in celestial reasons. There's an expression of one of the rabbis said, the Nefesh HaBahamas, the animal soul, is not necessarily secular. There is also a Frumah Nefesh HaBahamas, a religious animal soul. There is even a Chassidish Nefesh HaBahamas, a Chassidic animal soul. But ultimately, at the root of the motivation is a sense of separateness, of ego, of further perpetuating the delusion of ego in this world. The illusion that Hashem is not connected and present in everything. So that's always that's a powerful measuring instrument to determine it. What's the mice of a pile? What comes out? What is the actual result and consequence of the concrete world?
Doing something and the doingness of actually doing it. So the thinkingness is one process and the doingness is the actual doing of it. Are you suggesting, Rabbi, that the way in which a chassid, or say even someone who's a Torah person, is thinking, the motivation of how that person is thinking is very important, that if it comes from the part of us that is Nefesh Bahama or Nefesh Elokim, that makes the difference in the doingness?
You want to know if the different motivations can affect activity? Of course they can. They can affect the nature of the activity. They can affect the space of the features of the activity. They can affect the limits of the activity, and so forth. But, as again, ultimately, it's possible that the activity should be totally the same coming from either of the two souls, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
course. The Nefesh HaLikis is not a self-deprecating consciousness that loves mortification, torture, depression, and so forth. The Nefesh HaLikis celebrates life par excellence. The Nefesh HaLikis celebrates every moment of life with joy, delight, pleasure, geschmack. The Nefesh HaLikis experiences ecstasy constantly. The Nefesh HaLikis, however, its ecstasy is not derived from fragmentation and separateness, which it believes to be a shell, a husk which is covering up the inner dimension of man's soul. Rather, the Nefesh HaLikis enjoys that when you get in touch with the essence of life. That's what it enjoys. It doesn't enjoy when man creates a wall, a mechitza, a partition, not allowing the soul to express itself and experience itself. Now, in light of all of the above, we can understand another central idea which is connected to the Tanya. When the Alter Rebbe established in the first chapter the doctrine of the two souls, what is the source of this doctrine? So he emphasizes that his source is from Reb Chaim Vital. Reb Chaim Vital, 16th century master Kabbalist, was the chief exponent of Lurianic Kabbalah. And in his Svarim Shar Higdusha on Eitz Chaim, he describes these two souls, albeit very briefly and in a quite ambiguous fashion. The Alter Rebbe also adds a source from Torah, from Yeshaya Perik Nun Zayin, where the Navi says, Unishamais ani asisi, I have created souls, using the plural term, not neshama, but neshamais, indicating, according to the Alter Rebbe, that each man, each individual, possesses two souls. So many of you asked the obvious question, this concept of man experiencing a dichotomy and a duality in his life is explicitly discussed in many, many places in Chazal. Why does the Alter Rebbe have to trace the source of this concept to Reb Chaim Vital? First and foremost, take for example the Gemara in Brachas, the famous Gemara, Samach Aleph and Medaleph in Brachas. Reb Nachman says that when the Pasuk in Bereishis says, Vayitzer Hashem Elohim es ha'adam, afar min ha'adama, vayipach ba'apav nishmas chayim, Hashem created man, dust from the earth, blew into his nostrils a soul of life, which the Alter Rebbe quotes in this chapter 2 of Tanya. So Reb Nachman explains, why is Vayitzer written with two yuds, Vayitzer? Because Shnei Yitzarim bara HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yitzer Tevi Yitzahara, Hashem created two Yitzarim, two inclinations in man, a positive one, a negative one. The Medrash Rabbah on that Pasuk, Medrash Bereishis Rabbah, Parsha Yadalit, again says, Vayitzer Shnei Nitzarim Yetzer Tevi Yetzer Hara. In addition to this, the concept of a person having two Yitzarim fills the literature of Chazal, of our sages in Gemara, and Midrashim, and so forth. The explanation is that the concept of two souls is not synonymous with the concept of two yitzarim, of a yitzar tev and a yitzahara, although there is a connection between these concepts. Because yitzar tev yitzahara mean, essentially, who is the human being? The human being is neutral ground. The human being is neither good nor evil, neither positive nor negative. The human being is just a simple, plain creature like any other creature, possessing two inclinations, two forces which pull him in two directions. One is a positive inclination, the other a negative. Who is the human being himself? A neutral object. The Yetzer is the inclination existing within him. Nefashis, two nefashis is not two inclinations, two souls. Meaning that the positivity, negativity, the good and evil in man are not just two forces which pull him in two directions, But the elements of positivity and negativity actually constitute within the human being two souls. A nefesh is a consciousness consisting of the whole range of faculties, attributes, which create a personality, intellect, motives, emotions, feelings, passions, and so forth. The Jew, in other words, possesses within himself not two inclinations, two personalities. No wonder Jews are so meshuga. One is divine, one is a divine personality, the other is an animalistic personality. And the uniqueness of this approach, I believe, is expressed primarily in three issues. A. The definition of the Nefesh HaBahamas is firstly the biological soul of man. The vital principle of the physical body, as the Alter Rebbe describes in the opening of the Tanya in the first chapter. The Nefesh HaBahamas, the definition of the Nefesh HaBahamas doesn't begin with evil temptations. The definition of the Nefesh HaBahamas begins in the very fact that it is our biological, corporal force and source of energy in life. It is this soul which is defined as Ra, as Klipa, as negative, as coming from the concealing realities. It's not just the evil desires or impulses of this soul, but the very vital energy of the human body, which is already placed in the realm of Klipa. As the Alter Rebbe puts it in the first chapter, Nefesh achas mitzad haklipa v'sitra achira, v'hi ha-mislabeshes b'dam ha-adam, l'hacha yois haguf. One nefesh comes from the realm of the shells on the other side. This is the soul that encloses itself in the blood of man to vitalize the body. This means that the distortion of life, that the concealment of the truth, begins with the very definition of physical life as an independent reality, not as an expression of the soul. Yetzer Hara indicates the natural life of man. Man as a biological entity is fine. Where does evil begin? With his inclination towards negativity. What is the definition of the Yetzer Hara? That you're alive, that you breathe, that you want to eat, that you want to sleep? No. That's who you are. The Ra is introduced into your life when you have an inclination towards evil. The Alter Rebbe, who in Tanya attempted to trace back the human experience, the human condition, the cosmic reality, back to the quintessence of existence, who in Tanya usually defines good and evil in terms of unity versus fragmentation, is telling us that the source of life's problems and distortions begins in the very definition of a life separate from a soul. It begins in the moment when the body assumes an autonomous identity, where the person can indulge in his bodily needs as if the body was a separate entity divorced from a soul, where the eating can be an act which doesn't bring healing and recovery to the soul, which is not a conduit for transcendence and ecstasy. It is here where the distortion of life begins. Although the distortion certainly doesn't end here, unfortunately. But it is here where it begins. It is this which is the root and the source of the disharmony between the two elements in man's life. The illusion perpetuated through the very presence of the animal soul, that there is something outside of the realm of the spirit. On the other hand, the doctrine of the two souls means that man possesses within himself a godly persona. Yetzer Tov means, who is man? Man is a creature. Man is an earthly creature, which possesses within himself an inclination towards good, even towards holiness, even towards the service of Hashem. Here we come and we say much more than that. Infinitely more than that. Man possesses a godly identity, a godly personality. He has a personality within himself, a soul, a consciousness, consisting of the whole range of attributes and faculties that create a character and personality, which responds to godliness, naturally responds to godliness, which has the ability to experience godliness firsthand. He has a personality which is a spark of Hashem, a personality which originates, so to speak, in the Creator. Originates in the godly emanations and projections in the spheres of the world of Atzilus. This exists in the Jew. He has a personal relationship with Hashem in his personality. In other words, a human being, by tapping into his divine soul, can live a godly life. He can formulate a divine identity, personality. A personality that in every nuance expresses and mirrors its Creator. From the Yetzer Tov perspective, man ultimately remains relegated to the realm of creation, doing good things, gravitating towards holy things. When he taps into the Nefesh HaLekis, he can experience a personality which is a divine persona. There is an identity in him which transcends the parameters of self, the parameters of the world. And finally, we come to the third point, and here with this I will conclude. The uniqueness of the idea of two souls versus two yitzarim is that they can communicate with each other. And you can communicate with them. Yetzahara is an inclination towards evil. Nope. That's it. Period. A nefesh is a human being. A nefesh is a soul. So when we talk about a nefesh abahamis, it's not this evil entity that gravitates to evil and that's it. You're dealing with a soul which you can develop, educate, illuminate, enlighten. It's interesting, in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe does not use the terms Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Hara besides a few times. Usually he likes to use the terms Nefesh HaLekis and Nefesh HaBahamas. Because from his perspective, from the Tanya's perspective, this is really what it's all about. The Nefesh HaBahamas can't be defined and be said to be synonymous with the idea of the Yetzirah. Because the Nefesh HaBahamas is not naturally evil. It's not evil in the normal sense of evil. In the sense that it gravitates, it's always drawn to do bad things. By no means. It is not to be understood as a purely negative force, naturally drawing the person towards all types of negative activities and behavior. It's not the case. The animal soul represents the identity of man as a biological creature, as a certain developed state within the zoological species. Certainly, within that species itself, it contains superior qualities to other animals, especially in the field of intelligence. But by and large, the definition of this soul is man as a part of that species. As such, all natural dispositions, instincts, come from this biological soul. These are not bad per se. These are not negative. They're rather instincts stemming from man's essential quest for self-existence, self-preservation, self-endurance, self-gratification. These are not evil in their pristine state. They're neutral forces, which ideally are to serve as the vehicle for the divine soul, which must function and operate through them. And they can function as that vehicle. In the natural scheme of things, in the healthy life, the divine soul is to serve as the visionary in man's life, the animal soul as the implementer of that vision in a concrete physical world. The purpose and function of the animal soul is that it serve as a conduit, as a filter, as a channel to express and realize the divine soul, a vehicle, an instrument through which the divine soul can express its vision in a corporal body and a corporal environment. So the Nefesh HaBahamas is not evil, it's not a Yetzer Hara. So what happens? It's just that this soul can easily be tempted by various elements. You see, in its pristine state, there's nothing bad about it. Nothing. It's just easily tempted by various elements, which it may fall prey to. You see, due to the fact that it has a brute and crude nature, its inability for real broad vision, the fact that it's an animal soul which originates in the realm of creation, it can quite easily find itself being drawn to various things which are absolutely unhealthy, sometimes even outright evil. The animal soul is not a thief or a liar or a cheater by nature, but it can be tempted to engage in thievery, in lying and so forth, when it feels that this will serve her good. So the act of lying or the act of thievery or cheating or deception and so forth are very easily tempt her because she feels that this will be good, this will contribute to her existence, to her preservation, to her endurance. So she finds herself being tempted and drawn to it. This is what happens very, very often. Our natural animalistic soul becomes a force gravitating to all types of unhealthy, sinful behavior. It is thus degraded to a lower level than its own natural state. This is where it becomes a Yetzirah. This is now where the concept of Yetzirah is introduced into element of the Nefesh HaBahamis, where it becomes a Yetzir, an inclination towards negativity. And it becomes very difficult to distinguish between her natural self and her unclean garments, which she has enclosed herself in. You see, so the energy of the animal soul itself is innocent. It's pure. It's not antithetical to good. It just wants to exist. It wants to have a happy, tranquil existence. The question is, what's happiness? What's tranquility? What's going to contribute to her preservation? So since she's an animal, since she comes from the realm of Klipas Nega, from the realm of the shells, her mind is insensitive initially to godliness, to spirituality. This is a world which is defined by concealment. She herself is defined by concealment. So naturally she thinks that physicality per se is good, is the ultimate, is the essence. So she begins gravitating to it. And in that there are very many levels, and here the Yetzirah begins. What type of ra? Whether it's more subtle ra, whether it's outright ra, whether it's terrible ra, whether it's horrendous ra. But the energy that is enclosed in this draw to lie, for example, that energy essentially is not negative. That energy can be elevated, can be refined. It can be refined to the extent that it should ultimately come to identify with the ambitions of the divine soul. It's possible to take that energy and redirect it towards objects, ideas, realities which the divine soul wants. It's very, very difficult because, as mentioned, it's essentially you're dealing with a biological creature which senses itself naturally, looks at the world and at a self-contained identity as real reality, and to explain to her that real reality is godliness and selflessness is difficult. It takes a lot of toil. So naturally she gravitates to the world, and that ultimately brings her to gravitate even to prohibited things. But the point is that essentially you're not dealing with the Yetzirah. It's just the inclination to negativity, and her essential energy becomes sometimes so confused that it's difficult to distinguish. But really, your drive to sin or to negativity or to unhealthiness is not your Nefesh HaBahamis. It's the clothes that the energy that it wants to survive encloses itself in. But if you can divest the energy from the garments and then take that energy itself, transform it, which is what a true mystic or the tzaddik does, it can become an equal partner and ally, an ally to the Nefesh HaLikus. But the bottom line is that even if man has not succeeded in elevating and transforming that energy, at least in not all aspects of his life, he can never allow himself to allow the egotistical drives and natures, which are often unhealthy, to become the visionary that guides and directs his life on a daily basis. He always has to remember what it constitutes his true self and from where these impulses are coming. He has to remember their superficial power and energy. He has to remember they're coming from the animalistic, sheer ignorance and insensitivity, lacking true depth and contemplation. So even in the case where he didn't transform it, the divine soul always remains the eternal ruler and visionary of his life. You want to ask something? Yeah. That's a good question. You have two nefashas. So why should you go after and satisfy your nefesh alikis and you leave your nefesh abahamis wanting? Go satisfy your nefesh abahamis and leave your nefesh alikis wanting. The two souls are in conflict with each other. So I would rather satisfy my nefesh abahamis. Let my nefesh alikis cry. If I satisfy my nefesh abahamis is anyway going to cry. It's anyway going to be not content. So just go indulge in whatever you want, wherever your animalistic soul takes you. Yeah, there'll be a part of you that's discontent. Big deal. There'll anyway be a part of you that's unsatisfied. That's a gewaldike question. Two points I want to say. In the natural scheme of things, it only works one way. You see? If you devote your life to satisfy the animal soul, the egotistical soul, the divine soul remaining locked up and confined by gates, by trappings that are not allowing it to be expressed in your life, there will be an inherent disturbance in man's inner identity, because the divine soul can never divest itself from who it is and say, you know what, maybe the animal soul has a point. It doesn't work that way. The divine soul is in touch with essence. It's in touch with truth. So therefore, there will be an eternal dissatisfaction coming from the divine soul. On the other hand, the essential nature of the animal soul is to serve as a vehicle which expresses the divine soul. The animal soul, as mentioned, in essence, is not an adversary which hates the divine soul. It's just an animal. It's a biological creature. So essentially, its energy was there to serve as a vehicle which should express the divine soul and create harmony in a person's life. But there are many stages in that development and in that process. So in the ultimate natural scheme of things, the animal soul, when it follows the guidance of the divine soul, is in tune with its own identity as well. But if the divine soul is following the guidance of the animal soul, it's destroying its own identity. So therefore, in the natural scheme of things, the happiness of a balanced and harmony life can only happen when the divine soul is a visionary in man's life. Not vice versa. Then there is the question people ask, I don't feel my divine soul. I don't have a divine soul. It's not true. You say I have. Mela, big deal. I don't feel it. I'm perfectly happy. I have an ego, and life is about just self-expansion and self-enhancement, and I don't experience Hashem. I don't experience spirituality. And my morality is based on, you know, as I feel good. Whatever works for me. No. Ah? You mean after? Okay, that's true. I'll tell you. someone who I don't know if there's a human being who never heard the voices of his divine soul. He might misinterpret them, but the divine soul releases its voices in a powerful way. You might misinterpret them, you might run away from them, and so forth, but it's there. And once you identify what that voice is and where it's coming from, there's no turning back. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next week, Sunday at 10.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya each Sunday morning at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or to receive the tapes weekly by mail, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.